Welcome. I am Will Evans, and you are listening to A Living World Conversation with Deanna Janae. This is the fifth in a sequence of conversations with Deanna. Welcome again.
Well, thanks, Will.
During our last conversation, we spoke some about healing disconnection and building alliances.
Right.
Anything more that's come up that you'd like to add to that?
Well, talking about ways of healing disconnection, there's just such a simple way to begin that. If you're thinking about, you know, maybe you're feeling a bit disconnected, and that is to go out in nature, even if it's 5 minutes at a time, and just sit and be and go back to that spot and just keep going back to that spot, even day after day if you can, and just watch what happens. And over time, you begin to see how the seasons come into play and the weather and the animals, and you know, you begin to hear differently, you begin to sense differently, you begin to feel when there's a presence and when there's not a presence. And this is just a simple way of finding connection again. I know in our busy world, our busy lives, we need simple practices. And I find that one is great. And you can increase the time. You can go out for an hour and sit. But it's good to sit in the same place because you get to notice the differences that are happening out in the natural world.
Yeah, I would add that that's a way of healing disconnection.
Absolutely.
Because disconnection is a frightening condition, and fear erodes trust, and there's something very reassuring about going to the river every day.
And you do that, don't you?
As often as I can, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know I go out every day and just listen and watch the birds and, you know, just, yeah, it's really important for my well-being. And whenever I've ever felt disconnected, a walk in nature changes everything in my body, in my being.
Yeah, it invariably improves.
Invariably.
My balance.
Yeah.
But what's happening on a larger scale sometimes seems like it's about power and the illusion of control. And it can erode my balance and my self-control.
Well, I'm curious about power and illusion of control. Can you say more about that, Will?
Sure.
Like, give an example about that?
Yeah, I think we're residents of the Tower of Babel.
Oh, okay.
And there's a pattern of confusion and confused public discourse. And I don't think it's an accident. I think we're led to believe we're out of place or we're erroneous or dumb. But I'm sad to say I've come to realize it's by design to make me feel that way.
What I've noticed in the field is so much fear. And fear, like you talked about, erodes trust. And so often when I'm working with people, you know, the issue, the core issue comes to trusting in oneself. And with the field, the energy all around us of fear, and if you don't have enough, if you don't have what you need, or whatever is provoking the fear. There's so many things, and I can imagine you're all thinking about all the different things that provoke fear. But whenever fear shows up, we know that we have lost or we have blocked the connection to to the world around us. And power is going to feed on that fear. Fear is what power wants, and wants us to be fearful so that we agree with power. And we may not, our innate knowing may not agree with power or agree with the fear, but it can get a hold of us. And that brings me to think about how emotions, fear is an emotion, and how emotions aren't necessarily ours. Like, we are not our emotion. And often we feel the emotions around us. And like you said, these things can be contrived in order to control. And that can be put out in the field, and we pick up on it. And we may not even know why we're fearful or angry or, you know, whatever the emotion is. It may not even be ours to hold. And so the interesting practice is to let that run through us and move through us, kind of like water, like I talked about before, like water. And a good way to be able to know when it's our fear or not our fear is to go out in nature, and bring us back into balance.
Well, the last thing you said is very important. Whether it's our fear or external, perhaps manufactured fear or right. somebody else's, that's a huge distinction, because fear is a motivator. If I step into the street and a big truck comes around the corner, my fear kicks in and I get out of the street fast.
Right.
And that's healthy fear, and that's mine. And once I get on the sidewalk, it should be okay, and I should calm down and get out of that stressful dominance.
Right.
But it's, as you acknowledged, also possible for me to pick up your fear or what I heard down the street 2 minutes ago and take that on, and it's not really mine. And so that's much trickier. And I like the practice you suggested at the very beginning of this conversation, and that is just going into a place in nature. And it can even be done in your house. You can do it with a plant at home.
Yeah, and a candle.
But just extending the right to be to that plant with an authentic appreciation, because you are in an exchange with it. You're breathing what the plant breathes out, and it's breathing what you exhale.
Right.
So it's a meaningful thing to do inside or out, but it's such a lovely way to evaluate these things that run through us and can tip us off balance.
I think the key here, what you and I are talking about, is knowing the different kinds of fear. There's that flight or fight fear that is really important. It's what protects us. And then there's the fear that comes from the outside, which isn't necessarily there to protect us, but to control us. So there are two kinds of fear that we're talking about. And to make that distinction in our lives is huge. It's huge.
Yeah, and it's not a trivial subject or task, because mm-hmm. unnecessary fear can lead to inappropriate violence. And when people get afraid and don't know who to trust, don't know how to trust themselves anymore,
right.
and get in what they think, or they're trapped in a corner, or they don't have options to continue to survive, they're at risk of going violent. And do you have a sense of why humans have this proclivity to violence and destruction?
Well, I think you said it, and that is that there we're not necessarily making a distinction between what is real innate fear that is there to really protect us, like being out in the street and a truck coming at us, where there's genuine need for protection. We're hardwired for that. And yet we also, with our mind, pick up on the fear around us. And so if we believe everything that is happening out there and not getting centered and not making discerning choices about how we choose to relate to something, we can get caught up. We get caught up in that fear. And it's not, like I said, and like you said too, Will, it's not necessarily ours. If we could all make that distinction, then we realize we have a choice and we don't get caught in that flow of fear. That's just very, very important to be able to make distinctions.
Well, I would agree. And yet it's uncommon. And the reason I say it is I speak as a male. And I was taught to be strong. And yet it is evident to me men cannot find the strength to make equitable exchanges and sustain our relationship with Source, but rather pump up their strength to be destructive. And so I have to ask, what creates the inner chemistry in a man resulting in unnecessary violence?
Well, first off, I think we need to distinguish our roles as human beings. So I'm going to talk about feminine and masculine. And the feminine is the relational aspect of each one of us. And when that's in balance, when the feminine is in balance within either men or women or whatever gender you choose, we tend to want to be more relational. And it's like in our talk before about alliances, we have respect and we care for one another and we have reciprocity. We have appropriate exchange. When that's out of balance in a male or female, we tend to want to protect more. Now, the masculine energy is about protection and caring in a way, providing that strength and courage to protect family and, you know, what you have, your food source, you know, whatever it is. But when that's out of balance, then there's overprotection. And when I say out of balance, I think that when the masculine and feminine within each one of us gets out of balance, we become overprotectors and we fight. You know, in many cultures, the warrior didn't necessarily go out and kill everybody or hurt people necessarily, but a warrior was one who could stand for what is important to protect, and that's life, life itself. So when we look at life as the goal of life, life, you know, protecting life, that is that includes the feminine, the relational part, as well as the masculine, the protector part.
This is KDNK, and you're listening to Deanna Janae, and we're talking about balance, relationships, and domination and unnecessary violence. Mm-hmm. I have a sense unnecessary violence can grow out of a confused or disconnected or absent identity. So knowing who I am and investing the time mm-hmm. and the effort right. into figuring out why I'm here helps me not fall victim to confusing agendas or less likely to fall victim to them.
You know, we've talked a lot, Will, about the right to be. And what does that mean exactly? To me, it means that we all have a place to stand in the world. We wouldn't be here if we didn't have a place. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we have a homestead that we, you know, we farm or whatever. It means energetically that we all have a place to stand. All beings do. And when we know that, we trust life more. And trusting is what you're talking about, I think. When we don't trust, when we're scared, when we're afraid of losing something, we're going to defend more and we're going to be more righteous about our defense. If we were all to know that we have a right to be, and to me that says that I trust life and perhaps I can negotiate life better by trusting life. But when I don't trust life, I get scared. And we go back to the whole conversation about fear again.
Yeah, it's become pretty simple for me in the sense that simple, but not easy. But I have clarity about it when I say that, and that is my objective is to remember how to be a human being.
I think that's a really good objective. And the fact that we come in not knowing how to be a human being, we have to learn how to be a human being.
Well, particularly in our educational and system of commerce, I'm reminded of I can paraphrase what Martine Prechtel said. A commercial culture always panders to the lowest common denominator of awareness and taste, but that does not need to block us in our personal quest to become real human beings.
Mm-hmm. Well said, Martine.
So the other variable in this is change. And our ancestors were particularly attentive to working with change in a beneficial way.
You know, when I talked about going out into the woods, out into nature for just a short period of time and watching how things change, I think that's what you're talking about, is just everything changes. I mean, we're never going to get away from change, and to be able to flow with the changes is being with nature, really. Nature is always changing, and interestingly enough, it is also very much the same. It's a bit of a paradox.
Well, and one of the ways that I'm comfortable and I enjoy experiencing human change is in in what I would call an ordered council, where we speak one at a time and listen with our heart, and we're spontaneous, and I can watch myself change, and I can be more accepting of other people under those conditions. But that ordered council is a real potent structure for me in coming to balance with change.
It reminds me of the fact that we don't know everything and that we need each other. And that relationship is what you're talking about in ordered council, is that there's a relationship going on of openness and listening to what another says gives you, it makes your field more aware of what is possible. And then change becomes exciting. It becomes really fun.
And learning comes alive.
Learning comes alive, exactly. When we think that we know everything, well, you know, there's no room for new information. I think the evolution of consciousness has so much to do with that openness and being more and more open. And a council like what you're talking about will gives you an opportunity to open and expand the consciousness of everybody and every being all around us. As the council of beings is listening to.
Right.
Everything is listening.
Yeah. Yeah, and the awareness of including the animals and the plants and the elements is part of a full council.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. When we talk about commerce, we're talking about exchange, but we're talking about, also we're talking about resources and where we get those resources and what those resources become. I think we get rather short-sighted about the fact that we're exchanging something that is of the earth, you know, and so remembering in commerce, you know, because we're going to have commerce, that everything is living and has life to it. And to give gratitude for that exchange is another way to help us open and expand our awareness.
Yeah, and you mentioned it earlier. Respect is critical to ordered counsel and healthy relationships and exchanges.
Yeah. Definitely.
The other variable, and we've touched on this in earlier conversations briefly, but I'd like to have you tell us more about your relationship with silence. That amid the noise and haste, what peace there may be in silence.
Hmm. When we're talking, when we're not silent, we are not necessarily open to what is going on all around us. In silence, we hear the noise, we hear the you know, the world speaking. And that may not seem like silence, but within, to have the voices that are always informing us stop for a while and just to listen is an active, it's an active action, actually. Silence is action. And in that opens us to greater learning and greater awareness. I don't know.
And when I go to the river,
uh-huh,
and I'm silent, I get to enjoy the song.
Absolutely.
Of the water. And when I'm busy and talking and thinking, that somehow impairs my ability to hear the song of the river. But when I go there in silence, my receiver is got my attention, and I'm able to take it in.
Yes, our bodies have so many receivers, and to be able to take in the song of the river is, you know, it reminds me of a story of the song of the river reaching the river's mother, who is the ocean, and the ocean hearing that song of the land, because the song of the river is the song of the land and everything that's going on in the land. It's alive. And when the ocean hears that song, she brings back the waters to the land. So there's a cycle going on. And to be privy to that cycle, to be privy to how the world operates and keeps going, is quite a heart-opening experience. So being silent and listening, you're listening to way more than you may even know what you're listening to. That's a special, special gift.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Deanna.
Thank you, Will.
This is KDNK, and you've been listening to another Living World Conversation with Deanna Janae. Thank you for listening.